something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. If I'm gonna stay in this town, I'm gonna live in this town. I'm gonna live in Chicago, the greatest place around.
The Cubs and Sox are off for the winter, but inside the clubhouse starts the hot stove discussion now. David and Bruce take a look at which free agents and trades the Cubs and Sox should explore. Will they trade for a top pitcher or player? Is free agency the way the North and South Siders go? You help them make the call. 312-644-6767.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio 104.3, The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine on a beautiful Saturday morning in Chicago. And it's just as beautiful in Arizona where Bruce is talking baseball. And Bruce, Chicago Bound is the name of the segment. And I'm wondering, as we continue to ponder, a guy that we have talked about quite a bit here on this program. Zach Gallen remains unsigned. Zach Gallen remains probably the most qualified starting pitcher without a home as spring training nears for everybody this week. Zach Gallen, Chicago bound, Bruce? What are the chances? What's preventing him from joining the Cubs? Who else is in the mix?
So the Cubs' pursuit of being the mini Dodgers is contingent on getting a player like Gallen. And most people will say, well, Levine, we already go 7 or 8, maybe 9 deep in starting pitching candidates for the Cubs, which is true. However, the quality of Zach Gallen and the ability to put him on your staff is something different. You're talking about a 1 or a 2 to go along with what you have in the way of Kate Horton, the way you have with Boyd, the way you have with Tyone, you know. So, again, depth, you look at the Dodgers and how they won a World Series. The impactful pitchers that, other than Yamamoto at the end, were all on the shelf most of the year or only pitched between 15 and 18 starts the whole season. So having that type of depth, even though you don't have a $400 million payroll, I think is what the Cub front office wants to do, David, to continue to move this forward. And you can also use some of your starting pitching as being able to acquire that outfielder that one of our callers talked about to go along with, you know, adding more depth to this team. So when you talk about Zach Gallen, David, how much is the price of poker changed because of the fact that he's the top starting pitcher left on the board right now? And you saw Framber Valdez get a total of a $39 million average a year for the next 3 years with a potential to walk away from it after 2. How does that impact Gallen for you?
Okay, I've got questions. That's a good question for me. I'm looking at a guy who last year was 13 and 15, and his ERA was 4.83. And I understand Zach Gallen, and I would want the Zach Gallen who previously was a difference-making pitcher.
Wait a minute. Was that Dylan Cease or Zach Gallen?
Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease, before you get too sarcastic on me, did not have a great numerical season either. But I do think that Dylan Cease I'd rather have than Zach Gallen. Would you think otherwise? Would you rather have a Zach Gallen than a Dylan Cease?
Can I wait until after the season to answer that question?
You're diverting my argument here.
No, I mean, look, I think it is apples and oranges. Look, Cease is an extreme power pitcher. The expectations are he will be better than he was last year. Okay, with Gallen, he's not the 99-100 mile an hour guy, but he's an innings eating starting pitcher with an awful lot of quality innings behind him.
I agree. He made 33 starts last year, so he does take the ball every fifth day. And look, if the Cubs are willing to overpay to get Zach Gallen and find a way to work him into the mix, I'm not going to complain about it. I don't know how big of a priority I feel that it is. Because let me just really quickly go through what I'm looking at when I'm seeing the Cubs pitching potential or the starters that are on the roster right now. I think you got your four horses, essentially. You've got Cade Horton, Edward Cabrera, Matthew Boyd, and Jameson Taillon. You've got four guys who probably are questionable depth guys who could be, you know, it could be disappointments, they could be revelations. You got Ben Brown, Javier Assad, Jackson Wiggins, and Jordan Wicks. And then you've got two guys coming back from either injury or inconsistency in Justin Steele and Shota Imanaga. And if you do the math, I just named 10 starting pitchers. Organizationally, you have some depth that I understand that Zach Gallen is Zach Gallen.
Quality, David. Looking for quality.
You think it's just more quantity than quality right now with the Cubs? You don't think that they have in those 10 pitchers enough to win the National League?
With all due respect to the last four guys you named, there's plenty of question marks there.
Okay.
And I would also say this. Put on your general manager's cap, right? Put on Jed Hoyer's Nike cap, whatever you want to put on. Look at 2027 and how many of these guys are left on the Cubs.
That's true. That's a good projection. The 2027 projection is difficult, even though necessary. But I believe a lot of things could change between now and then. But I respect that position.
And Gallen, let's say you signed Gallen to a contract similar, not money-wise, but contract-wise to what Valdez signed. A three-year deal with a opt-out after two. Not one, mm-hmm. but after two, okay? That helps you solidify your starting pitching where you're going to lose Imanaga. You're going to lose Taillon. You're going to lose Boyd because they're all free agents. Now, you might want to sign one of them. You're not going to sign all three. So, therefore, looking at the state of the Cubs minor league system, other than Wiggins, who can you identify as being stepping up in 2027?
That's probably a great question. Nobody besides Jackson Wiggins probably fits that category. The guys like, you're right about the question marks surrounding Ben Brown. You're right about the question marks surrounding Jordan Wicks. They've been in the organization for a while now relative to a lot of prospects' ascent without proving that they are beyond question. All right, I'm keeping my general manager's hat on since you told me to put it on. I'm going to ask you this, Bruce. Number one, what kind of contract is Zach Gallen going to sign? What are we negotiating here? Opt in or opt out? But in terms of the totality, what's his salary going to be in 2026? Number two, if you do sign him after you negotiate a deal, are you willing to give up the draft pick that it will cost you because of the qualifying offer the Diamondbacks offered?
Great question, David. Great question. That's been the lingering thing over his free agency is the draft pick. And the idea also that when you have a guy like this, is he going to be more the version of previous years or last year? But I think when you look at the bargaining situation, let's take that hat off I gave you for Jed Hoyer.
Okay.
Put on the Boris Corporation hat.
That's a chapeau. Okay, you have that's that, not that? A hat, that's a chapeau.
So you have that on now, and you're thinking, okay, I have the best pitcher left. We're 4 days away from spring training starting. 3 days. Am I better off holding back my pitcher and Zach Gallen until pitchers start getting hurt in spring training and getting the deal that I want then, as opposed to going to Jed Hoyer right now and getting 40 cents on the dollar for what we originally wanted in a 3-year or 5-year AAV was $25 to $27 million.
If you're the shrewd agent, you are waiting and you're counting on the fact that you know there will be injuries because there always are, and you know about supply and demand, and also the price for Zach Gallen will go up the minute a starting rotation gets compromised. So yeah, I think it could be. There's no urgency for Scott Boras. There's no urgency for Zach Gallen.
David, the problem though is if Kansas City loses a pitcher or Minnesota loses a pitcher or Miami loses a pitcher, they don't have the $25 to $27 million a year to give to Gallen. Mm-hmm. So you're playing a little bit of poker when it comes to, well, if we use that philosophy, it's only good for 5 to 7 teams that can afford to pay us what we feel he's worth. So again, you're gauging both ends, and you know, are you better off taking a pillow contract from the Cubs? Let's say that Hoyer offers a 2-year deal for $54 million.
Okay, that's a lot. It's high.
Right. But are you better off taking that than trying to get that 5-year deal that you were trying to get for the guy all winter, and knowing that that type of money might not be available for a team that loses a pitcher?
That's a good question. It's a fair way to frame it. And I think we'll find out eventually whether in fact the Cubs are willing to go into that kind of a range. The other thing that's a little bit harder to answer, Bruce, and I wonder if it is even a factor, but I want to address it while we're discussing all this. And 312-644-6767, weigh in if you are interested, because the Zach Gallen question has been looming over the Cubs for a few weeks now. Do you think that the Cubs are concerned at all about the moment they sign Zach Gallen? You likely have veterans who are on your rotation that have been very good Cubs and were a very big part of last year's success, immediately not understanding what that means potentially for them. The minute you sign Zach Gallen, you create this maybe uncertainty in the minds of a Matthew Boyd or a Jameson Taillon or maybe even somebody else who, well, that means they're trading me. I'm gone, because they're not going to keep seven starting pitchers.
It's a wonderful point, David, because you do create doubt on one end. You create competition on the other, right? To say, well, I am Jameson Taillon. I will be a free agent. I am Matthew Boyd. I will be a free agent. Is that incentive already there for them? Or are they pushed further by the idea that if Gallen comes in, Taillon might be the first guy that the Cubs look to trade for other depth that they need? Is it a big arm in the bullpen? Is it a right fielder? Is it depth in the infield? Is it a combination of all that? You know, starting pitching is king. I mean, that is, you know, that value is king when it comes to Major League Baseball.
We're talking to Tommy Hotovy at the bottom of the hour, 10:30. The Cubs pitching coach will join us right now. Let's go out to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. Tom is in Westchester. Tom, thank you for holding. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Hey, guys. Great to be on. I've been wanting to get on the show for a while. I just had a couple comments about the White Sox, and I feel like there's two names that really have been overlooked. I say Lenin Sosa being overlooked just from the standpoint of the fact that he was the team's best hitter last year. And I just see a lot of discussions where he's not in the lineup or they just want to trade him. And I just worry about, you know, the Sox, both with Lenin Sosa and Corey Lee, are kind of in this position where they're compelled to sell low on some guys. And I would just really rather they not do that.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate the phone call.
If it's possible, another name is Brooks Baldwin.
Brooks Baldwin. Yeah, that's it. So Brooks Baldwin and Lenine Sosa, Bruce, as we quickly make a departure to the White Sox lineup, going back to that, what do you think about those two guys and how they fit in?
Well, I think that we're starting to see some depth for the White Sox, and that is a good thing. You know, we couldn't see past the guys that were starting for the White Sox in the field the last couple of years. Now you're starting to say, well, yeah, maybe we do have some alternatives on the bench. If somebody is injured, if somebody is not playing up to par, if somebody needs to push somebody, we have guys like that there. And Sosa, you know, to his credit, did hit 20 home runs last year. So that is, you know, a bat that you have to consider that can work his way back into the lineup. Is he going to play more second base than Madroff? That's my question.
That's a good question. It's a fair question. I don't think he likely would play ahead of Madroff. Let's go back to the Cubs conversation for a moment, because there are a couple other things I wanted to explore with you about the potential usage. And we're talking about this in the context of Zach Gallen being out there and his addition, what it would mean. Psychologically, we addressed that. But in terms of the usage, in you've floated this throughout different times of the offseason, the six-man rotation. Looking at Cade Horton and expecting big things from him, he pitched 118 innings last year.
More. He pitched almost 100, over 140 if you include AAA.
Fair enough. 140 if you include the minors, 118 with the Cubs. Edward Cabrera pitched similar numbers with him, 137 and two-thirds, and that was a career high, the first time that he has cleared 100 innings. Both of those guys are big parts of why the Cubs believe they have a division-winning team, a pennant contender. How do you think they will be used early on, or when will that change throughout the season, or what is the plan, do you think? Are they five-and-dive guys? Are they guys that if they're rolling, they're going to go into the seventh? What do you think that, you know, the Cubs will do in terms of their usage of Horton and Cabrera specifically?
A wonderful question, David, because I don't know the answer, and it'll be one that I steal from you and use with Craig Counsell on Wednesday when he does his original dog and pony show here in Mesa. So I would say that is, you know, back to the six-man rotation conversation. When you talk about, do you have to watch the innings for Cabrera? Do you have to watch them for Horton? Do you look at them early in the year and say, we have to protect everybody, we have enough depth that we don't have to stretch them out? Or are you doing some of them a disservice by shortening their arms and never getting to the fifth or the sixth inning because you're training their arms to go less? All good questions. I have zero answers for you right now.
Well, the investment in Gallen potentially then in that context, one of the things that we've been talking about and why this does matter could be insurance against those guys either being used sparingly or skipping starts, or even the threat of injury. So you wonder if that would be money well spent invested in Zach Gallen, even though it sounds like a lot, between $22 and $25 million per year. Bruce, how does the Tarik Skubal arbitration case that he won against the Tigers, and this, you mentioned the Valdez contract with the Tigers, affect the Zach Gallen conversation with the Cubs?
Well, I mean, it probably impacts the money a little bit because, you know, the price keeps going up for outstanding starters. Now, I mean, you're not – Skubal is arguably the best pitcher in baseball, right? I mean, would he be in the top two with him and Skeens? Would that be 1-2 for you? Where would you be with that?
Yeah, I think 1-2. I think Skubal deserves the benefit of the doubt to be number one and then Skeens, but it's close.
So with $100 million coming off of the Cub, potentially coming off of the Cub payroll next year, does $40 million of that automatically go to Skubal as a free agent?
Well, if he wants to come to the Cubs at that rate, I think that you'd have to definitely consider that possibility.
It'll be 40 times 10.
As dangerous as long-term contracts, I don't know about times 10. I don't know about a long-term contract to a that long of a term to even somebody as special as Scooble is. I think that's a question that Cub fans are going to automatically shake their heads, nod their heads, yes, yes, yes. But let's wait and see until after this season to find out what they can win without him.
Well, my point is, if the Tigers somehow fall on their face, Scooble will be traded in July. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, do you have enough money if you're the Cubs? Do you have enough money if you're the Red Sox? Do you have enough money if you're the Yankees? And do you have enough farm system to trade for a two-month buy-in for Scooble at the end to help you try to win a World Series? I know we've gotten a little further away just starting spring training, but these are things that baseball executives think about.
Well, of course, because I don't know how far away it is, Bruce. It all goes back to how we started this program and how we'll continue to treat the Cubs this season. This is not a developmental season. This is not a season that you think of anything else except for winning it all. And if you don't consider yourself a World Series contender, I don't know what you were doing going out and investing $175 million in Alex Bregman. So anticipating these kinds of things, figuring out how to fit Zach Gallen, proven veteran starter, into a rotation that might seem crowded but isn't, these are all relevant, necessary questions because you want to be thinking big. And that's the way the Cubs have to be thinking now.
And the fact that we feel since last year that they have more of an all-in mentality than they've had since they traded away the 2016 group, I think that, there's real, to go along with our hype, there's real conversation, there's a real thought process that this could happen, because you can't go in three quarters of the way. You have to go all the way. And I think the Cubs would certainly look at Gallen now and Scooble at the deadline, even though it costs you $10 million and three of your top farm system guys for the Scooble that we expect to be there pitching again in 2026. So with all those things in mind, where do you go with your processes, as they call it now?
It's great. It's a great train of thought, Bruce, and it's fun to consider, and it's all related in the pitching. And we'll talk about the Cub pitching with the Cub pitching coach next on Inside the Clubhouse. Tommy Hotovy will join us. It's 104.3 The Score.
He's doing well. I don't want to put like specific timelines on it. I mean, he's throwing. We get videos of him throwing in Arizona all the time. I think you'll see him doing most of the normal stuff in spring training if he continues to progress well. And then we'll see from there. But I think it's a real positive he's throwing the way he is. And I think it's a positive that he'll be doing pretty normal stuff, I think, during spring training.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score. David Haw and Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock. That was Jed Hoyer talking about the status of Justin Steele as he brings him back to spring training, hopefully healthier, and we'll see what the timetable is as early as this week. That takes us out to our Circus Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. We find Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hotovy. Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well. Beautiful Arizona here. Doing well.
Thanks. Yeah, it's 18 degrees here in Chicago. Bruce is in Arizona with you, so you guys can connect this week, and I'll be jealous. But it is exciting, Tommy. We saw you at Cubs convention, and now it's time for spring training and all that comes with that. A lot of hope, a lot of expectation. And let's just start with we heard Jed Hoyer talking about Justin Steele, and his health is certainly paramount to this season. Before you get there, can you tell us anything about Justin Steele, where he is, and what's expected?
Yeah, I think obviously what's expected from Justin is, to get back and be the dominant version of himself. And you know, when you talk about timelines with guys that have surgeries or these types of injuries, like the medical staff, the doctors will always give you a timeline. And then the player will naturally have his own timeline too, depending on how he's recovering. And, you know, there's just so many different phases to these rehabs that guys progress differently. And so I think to this point, Justin's progressed really well. I think he's a guy that has always benefited from, you know, structured throwing. He's a guy that can go out there and do whatever he wants and throw a football around with ease and do all these things. So I think he's done a really good job responding to some of the structured throwing. And then as his intensity ramps up, you start to see his delivery and things sync up pretty quickly. He's such a good athlete. So I think for the timeline of where he's at and what we expected, he's in a really good place. But we still have a lot of those kind of phases and boxes to check. I think him throwing on the mound already is such a positive because he just moves so well on the mound and he starts to sync things up. So I think, you know, as we get into these first few weeks of camp, you're going to see Justin, you know, getting on the mound. He's obviously going to be behind a lot of guys in terms of volume and intensity, but he is going to be getting a lot of reps and he's in a good place.
Tommy, can you give us the pros and cons of a six-man rotation for the Cubs the way they're situated right now? You have depth, you have experience, you have youth, you have guys coming back from injury, you have young guys that are still trying to feel their way through innings, loads. So let's start off first by my question being, give us the cons for a six-man rotation.
Okay, can I do the pros first? Because I'm actually less in favor of a six-man rotation than a lot of people. So I want to start with the pros, and then I'll get into the cons. Pros of a six-man rotation: obviously, you're prolonging the innings of guys you have in your rotation. You're prioritizing their season, in my mind. Like, if you're doing a six-man rotation, you're prioritizing innings, you know, maximizing your starting rotation as long as possible. You give guys rest, you allow them to continue to work on things between outings, but you're basically saying these six guys are the most important guys on the team, in my mind. And a lot of the starting pitchers are, you know, they're valuable because they're going to throw a lot of innings. Cons are you put a lot of stress on the bullpen, number one. If early in the year you're trying to, you know, maximize starters' innings on the year and you're holding your starters to only like five innings, 85, 90 pitches, and you're also going one less arm in the bullpen, your bullpen is going to be gassed at some point. So I always have a big concern of just saying like, oh, we can run a six-man rotation whenever we feel like we want to, which is parts of the year, I think it's important, but to say that for an extended period of time, you better have a lot of bullpen arms that you can either, you know, rotate through with options or have guys that can cover multiple innings, over the course of that span. I think of it much more as like these are levers that we can pull throughout the year to help maximize more than just one person. And I do think sometimes a six-man rotation, when you have those guys, yes, you're giving them an extra day of rest, but you're going to need them to go more pitches and more pitch count and deeper into games because if not, the bullpen's going to be crushed.
That bullpen is interesting because here you go again, Tommy. You are going to be tasked with bringing it all together. And I know that's probably an exciting challenge. That's what you do, and you do it so well. But this year especially, after such successful outings last year from a lot of guys, now you've got, of the 18 pitchers last year that made five or more relief appearances, only two of those guys are in your projected opening day bullpen this year. How does that affect your approach? How does that keep you engaged and reinvigorated every season? Because it's got to be something that, yeah, it seems like, you know, you got a lot to do, but this is what you why you love to do it.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head there. It's what we really enjoy doing is just like having new guys that we can continue to help and grow. And yeah, obviously we'd love to have guys returning that you spend all that time and equity with for a year. But I mean, like, selfishly for me too, I love seeing them go in and make life-changing money, you know, afterwards as well. And those are the things that I think when players come here and they understand, not only do we want to win games and we want to be, you know, the best team on the field every day, we want to help these guys get better and be the best version of themselves every day, but we also want to help them, you know, change their careers, you know, and grow and learn and develop. And we've become a destination for that, for guys and guys that have had good years in the past and maybe struggled a little bit. They want to come refine some things. They want to continue to grow and learn. And, you know, I can't speak for all the other organizations out there, but we take pride in being able to help guys do that. And they make us a better team. And so when you have guys that are coming in that are hungry, that want to learn, want to grow, want to get better, that makes for a good recipe of a successful team. And we've been lucky and have built a bullpen like that for the last few years.
I mean, I have a lot of faith in you and your intelligence innately, your baseball IQ. So please tell me who Ben Brown is and how he fits in with the Chicago Cubs. What is the future of Ben Brown in your mind? Not as a Cub employee or the top pitching guy in the organization, but who should Ben Brown be?
I mean, Ben Brown should be in, you know, a established big league starter in my mind. He's got the stuff there to be able to do it. Now, I think Ben's been on a journey over these last few years of, if I can just kind of take a snapshot of what the last 3 years were for Ben. Ben was a young kid that threw hard, had some delivery inconsistencies and things he wanted to work on, worked hard to accomplish that, had some success. Then he got hurt, you know, then he got hurt for the first time and really had to understand how to navigate that rehab. Then he came back and put a lot of thought and effort into being healthy. And sometimes performance or other things take not a back burner, but they're not the number one priority thing, right? You want to have a healthy, successful year and get through a season healthy. That's a huge mental checkbox for young pitchers. And I think for Ben, he's at a great point of his career now where he's accomplished that and he's had a full healthy season. He's known what success looks like in the big leagues. He's also known what failure looks like in the big leagues. And he's at a great point of growth in his career where he's learning so much about himself and what he can do comparative to other guys. And when young guys come up, they want to be like other guys that have success. You know, success breeds success. So guys want to gravitate toward other guys that have that. But the thing is, you know, guys have success differently. And I think when you try to be somebody that you're not, or try to do things that your body's just not physically capable of doing because somebody else can do that, that gets guys into, you know, a bad place. And I think Ben has learned a lot over the last couple of years. I have 100% faith in him being a big league starter. We know he can be a power arm in the bullpen too, if we need him to come in and throw some big innings, and he's a team player, and the fact that he'll do whatever, you know, the organization needs him to do. But our goal is to get him stretched out, continue to develop the changeup, you know, working on a few other pitches and continue to build out his repertoire and let him go be a dominant, you know, pitcher for us.
What are you most curious about as you get ready to welcome everyone back for another season?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think Edward Cabrera is obviously, you know, top of that list, just getting around him, what's going to make him tick, what some of the things that on a day-to-day basis, you have bigger conversations at this point of the year with him about, you know, where he's at, but just getting the day-to-day around him, I think that's a big one. Shota's had a great off season, you know, for the ups and downs of how things went for him to be back. He's talking and thinking about a lot of the right things. He feels great about where he's at. And so I think he's a guy that's coming in, you know, ready to prove, you know, who he is and what he can do. I think those are two big ones. And then, you know, for me, like Cade, you know, just can we continue the dominance? We saw that second half of the season. And I would just say the off season that he had was about as good as I could, you know, expect for a young kid who had a really good year and then ended the season hurt. Like, he didn't take a ton of time off because he wanted to continue to build and feel better as the off season went on and make sure that the injury and stuff wasn't going to affect him that much. So, those are probably the three big ones for me, just as we get into camp, seeing where those guys are at.
I mean, philosophically, when you look at pitchers, you work at pitchers, you've seen pitchers up close and dealing with them on a daily basis. Do you envision greatness from guys who have extreme beliefs in themselves? And I'm using Horton as an example, because when I talk to him, it always appears to me that he will not be happy unless he's great. Not good, but great. And go out there and think about throwing a no-hitter every time he goes out there. Is there something to the makeup or the different types of pitchers that you see greatness in people who aren't there yet?
Yeah, I think we all, I think it's very easy in this game, and you guys can do it just as well as we can. When you look at stuff on paper, you see velocity and movement and spin rate and all these things that you can be like, why this guy should be really good. You know, why is he not good? And I think one thing that data has done to this game is that it's made everybody scouts. So they think they know the trajectory, where a player should be, how much success they should have, so much so that we have all this betting, you know, now with how many innings and ERA and all this stuff that people should be having. And it's just, you're dealing with human beings. And I think for me, it's getting to know what motivates guys, number one, is the best way to coach them. It's one of the best things I think I learned from Joe Maddon, being around him when he had that five levels of being a pro. You know, the one, you're the first guy is just happy to be there, as excited as a big leaguer. The second guy, number two, your survival mode, trying to stay in the big leagues. Number three is when you finally believe you belong. Number four is when you're just trying to make as much money and maximize your earning potential as you can. And then the last guy is just wants to win. He's got to that point in his career where he'll do whatever he takes to have to win a game. And stuff like that just really helps you as a coach identify where a player is, what makes them tick, and what's going to motivate them. Those are the type of things that I think help us understand, you know, where guys are going and where they can go. There's definitely guys that have some of the best stuff in the world that don't believe in themselves. And as a coach, that's our job to continue to build them up and make them understand why their stuff is so good and why it's going to play, you know, and have success in the future.
Great stuff, Tommy. Before we let you go, quickly, Super Bowl prediction?
You know, it's crazy. I think the Seahawks have just kind of like walked through the NFC. As much as I want to say the Patriots, because I obviously like Drake May and what they're doing with the offense and what they're building, the Seahawks defense is tough. It's tough. It'll be interesting. Seahawks defense in cover two has allowed like four touchdowns and eight interceptions this year. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I think Seahawks all the way, 27-23. Thanks for the time. Enjoy this week. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you guys. Have a good one.
Tommy Hotovy, Cubs pitching coach, out in Arizona already, along with Bruce. He talked about the Super Bowl. You don't want to miss it right here. Tomorrow night on The Score, Super Sunday coverage begins at 1, continues throughout the day. Then Seahawks-Patriots kickoff is 5:30 right here on The Score and the Free Odyssey app. But before that, tonight, you don't want to miss the Bulls. The Bulls, with their new roster, they host the Nuggets at the United Center. Pregame coverage begins 6:45, tip-off at 7 on 104.3 The Score and the Fitzgerald Equipment Bulls Radio Network, powered by Helly Forklifts. We'll be back on Inside the Clubhouse to wrap things up. Bruce and David here for another segment on 104.3 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 104.3 The Score and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Back to wrap things up with Bruce here at The Score 104.3 The Score. Sounded great on FM, Bruce, this morning. So let's talk about the World Baseball Classic for a moment. The Cubs have 8 of the 26 players projected to be on WBC teams. The White Sox, 3, I believe. How complicated is this going to get, and what do you think about overall it coinciding with the beginning of spring training?
Yeah, I don't like it, but they can't – it doesn't matter what I think. They love this for baseball, the attention it gets throughout the world, the importance of this in each country. So I understand that there's no good time of the year for this, because if you wait till after the World Series and do something like this, you have weather issues in the United States. And on top of that, you also have pitchers whose arms are worn out. Okay, if you want to talk about having major injuries, those would occur when you have your great pitchers after a full season and a possible long playoff trying to pitch in the WBC. So no good time for it. But eight Cub players, Suzuki, PCA, Bregman, Amaya, Palencia, Boyd, Tyone, Assad. Lots of inventory won't be around for the possibility between 10 and 12 days, depending on how long each team lasts in the WBC. And, you know, the injury is the main major concern. There's no question about it. You lose a top pitcher or player for an extended period of time, you go, this isn't what it's about. You know, it's all about the regular season. That's what counts.
You see, the Sox have, I think, three players, but one former player, Alexi Ramirez, 44 years old. He's playing for Team Cuba. How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I didn't know that Alexi would get out of the rocking chair for an event like that.
At the other end of the spectrum, that's great. Jose Contreras' son, William, is playing for Brazil. I think he's like 17 years old.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of cool things about it, except for the risk factor. And if one of those players on your team gets hurt, you're not going to like this tournament very much.
Well, I liked having fun this morning, Bruce. Good show. Thanks for setting up our guests, Ryan Fuller and Tommy Hotovy. Thank you for you and doing all that and having the time to join us this morning out in Arizona. I'd be out golfing. What time's your tee time?
Yeah, I think Mitch pays me to to show up.
Great stuff, though. Thanks a lot. Have fun out there.
All right, have a great week.
Spring training begins this week. We'll cover it all here on the Mullinghaus Show beginning 5:30 on Monday morning and throughout the week on The Score. Thanks for listening to Inside the Clubhouse. To our guests, Adam Sudzinski behind the glass, Tyler Farengol helping out as well. Keep it right here. Steve Rosenblum is next on 104.3 The Score.